Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, December 8th. I'm back in the studio, and I have Kelsey with me for the second day. Welcome to the show,
Kelsey. Hello. Thank you.
It's okay. Don't be afraid to talk.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, awesome. Did you have fun yesterday?
It was great.
Great.
I had
so you feel
a blast.
This is a good vehicle for you.
Yes. It feels like home already.
Really?
Second day. It does. Good. I love it.
Good. Well, we try to make everybody feel comfortable here, you know. So.
Yeah.
In a few minutes, we're going to get to our studio guest, who's fascinating. A lot of interesting stuff we're going to talk to her about.
She is fascinating.
Yeah. And so what's going on with you, Ashley? Kelsey, I'm going to have to get used to it.
Muscle memory.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly. I'm telling you, my memory is like terrible, but I'll try to get all the names correctly. So,
yes.
Kelsey, how's it going?
It's going great. It's a gorgeous Tuesday.
It is. It's beautiful outside.
You know, I actually got up and worked out this morning. So
you
I
did.
Was so proud of myself. Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday. How, you know, it's the motivation factor is probably the hardest part, but I did it. So
good.
I feel good. Got the endorphins going and energy up and ready to go.
Cool. So, I mean, do you try to work out every day?
I do. I try. I at least do 5 days a week. Every now and
That's
then, I'll,
good.
Every now and then, I'll join the weekend warriors and and go to the gym on the weekend. But I usually take them off. So,
It does still require effort for you to go. Would you say? I mean, because you're saying you didn't feel like it, and all this stuff.
It does. But you know what's so nice about. Hosting with you in the morning is it kind of gives me a little bit of a schedule because like we were talking about yesterday, I mean, being an actress, I have such an erratic schedule and it varies from day to day. So, you know, I might work like a 16-hour day one day and then be off for the next 2 days or whatever it may be. So that scheduling is very hard. And I found personally, if I don't do it in the morning, I'm probably not going to do it.
Yeah.
Some people can squeeze it in at night, but that's not really my thing. I'm usually tired and just wanting
exactly,
to watch
yeah.
a movie or something like that, go hang out with friends. So, you know, if it doesn't happen in the morning, it's not going to happen. So I always do it before I come to the show and we're good to go.
Good. Exercises for the morning, I feel. You know, if you don't do it in the morning, don't bother because you'll never get around to it. Although, I mean, the gyms are full at night too, you know.
They are.
But, it's going to require a lot of effort for me to go back to the gym, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of like, you know, just working out, even if I don't have to go to the gym, you know, just do push-ups and things like that.
You know what's
it's
great,
better
too, is
than
classes.
Nothing.
I know guys don't think they think they're for girls.
No, I
whatever,
used to go to classes. I used to take aerobics when it was the hottest thing ever. You know, it's like almost like dancing with music and stuff. I had the best time.
Like jazzercise.
I was the only guy there, you know, but
hey, it's
like
a great
way
to meet girls. Are you single?
It is.
I don't know if you're single. Are you single?
I'm single.
Okay. Well, hey, there you go. One of my friends goes to yoga like every week and he met his girlfriend there. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, maybe I should start.
Lots of
but,
girls there.
But I hear that a lot of people don't go to the gym to get picked up, you know, so. So
they
I don't,
don't
know, you know, you don't want to like invade someone's space while they're working out, you know.
That's
so
true.
I'm like that, you know. I don't just walk up to women and stuff like that, you know. I'm not like that.
Yeah.
So I wish I was, but I'm not.
Well, you're a rare breed in LA.
Yeah.
seem to pursue.
I know because
here.
It's like I feel I don't know whatever I say is going to sound like a line, you know, even though I mean it, you know.
Right.
People are always saying just be honest and say what you feel and stuff like that. But it always, you know, you figure a woman has heard everything, you know, and she's going to think you giving her a line or something. So that's why it's always better if you just kind of like bump into somebody or run into somebody like elevator, whatever, you have something common to talk about and then you can take it to the next level or something, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, so that works. So just wait for a woman to approach you, which doesn't happen very often, you know, unless you're Brad Pitt or something.
That's true. But hey, you never know.
Exactly.
Stranger things have happened.
They have. So, yeah, so, you know, working out is cool. I wanted to ask you, do you watch any of the shows on TV at all? Do you watch TV?
You know, I've actually been really bad about TV lately. Just so busy. And
it's not bad. It's a good thing not to watch TV.
I guess it is a good thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, I can get into these like binge watching sessions on Netflix that right. I think, you know, most people can do. I know my sister, my little sister Brooke, was really into Gossip Girl for a while, and she just like watched, you know, all of the seasons, and it's apparently really addicting.
Really?
Yes, yes,
yes. It
seems
like all the shows are like that.
You know, the one thing, I did watch Borgia on Netflix. Oh my gosh, love that show. The production quality, amazing.
Really?
The costume, set design, everything was just like impeccable. So we really like that show. But Game of Thrones, which is kind of all the rage, uh-huh. I was not able to get into.
Never seen it. You see, I don't watch any TV at all.
Oh, wow.
I don't watch TV. When I have free time, I read. I enjoy it more. But I was here about all these shows and everything, and I want to at least sample them.
Right.
So I started with Orange is the New Black on Netflix.
How was that?
Right?
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I don't know. It grabbed me. Now I'm hooked on it.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, no. It's actually pretty good. I also started watching Breaking Bad. So both these shows are like old, you know, but I
right.
never really watched them. And people always talk about them.
Right.
So I thought the pilot was good on Breaking Bad, but it doesn't really grab me. It's not like I want to really know what's going to happen next time, you know.
Yeah.
With Orange is the New Black, that's like, you know, a woman's prison and everything. And it's just like, it's cool because you don't really see that often, you know. Like
right.
women in prison and stuff like that, you know.
Yes. It's the subject matter is really unique
yeah.
on that show. So I'm interested to start watching that. But I feel like with Breaking Bad, people either love it or hate it. It's
yeah.
kind of a black or white
thing. So there's people that hate it, huh?
There are.
Really?
Yes. I know. I have friends who just, you know, couldn't get into it. And
yeah.
My, you know, other people who were into it would just say, just, you know, watch till the third episode at least, and then you'll be hooked. But hey, to each his own. Some
exactly.
people just aren't into it. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think different strokes for different folks. But let's see. What's my favorite show recently? I would have to say Borgia. I loved
really?
It.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Is that a Netflix series?
It is a Netflix series.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I watched it all the way through. I got so into it. So, and then I'm a huge Investigation Discovery fan. I'm addicted to those little crime shows.
Really?
Yes. You know how it's so funny? People say, like, if you think your life is bad, watch Court TV because it's going to make you feel so much better about your life. Right? Even though it's fabricated, you're like, oh, my gosh, my life is amazing. Look at these people. They're crazy, you know? And I think that's kind of what crime shows do for me. I watch Investigation Discovery so I can think, oh, gosh, my life is amazing. I mean, at least, like, my husband didn't kill me and then, you know, kill my family and everything. Whoa. So, anyways, I enjoy that. I like those shows a lot.
I know. It's like all those reality shows are crazy. You know, I mean, the people, what they expose about them and things like that, you know. Sometimes you just can't believe it, you know, all those court shows and everything.
Yeah, I've been approached to do some reality shows, but I just haven't been able to take the plunge yet.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it would have to be the right one, but,
yeah.
you know, I like to stay private about some parts of my life.
That's
you know?
True, yeah. So is that like it would be like a game or something, or just they follow you around? What kind of a reality show would it be? Because, I mean, they have, like, you know, like Survivor.
Sure.
Things like that, you know, where it's a game.
Right.
But some reality shows are like Kim Kardashian or something where they just follow them.
Right. Well, you know how it goes in the entertainment industry. There are a million pilots a year and a million, you know, ideas.
Yeah.
So I've been approached to do reality shows about, for example, one of them was like Country People in L.A., right? I know, which is bizarre because I am from the country, but I wouldn't really
right.
consider
She's
myself.
She's not really a hillbilly.
Right, I know. So I don't know if they really were doing the casting very well on that. But they did want me to do that, and that didn't end up working out. And what's another one? Oh, after I was in my Super Bowl commercial in 2015, I was in a Chevy Colorado Super Bowl commercial, and so
wow,
you remember me that? Yes, it was a very intense role. I pointed and said, "Truck." I know. I know. But it was one of the first really, really mainstream things I had done. And so, you know, it was pretty neat because all of my friends and family and everybody, I mean, my phone just like blew up. I was actually at a party whenever it aired. I didn't even see it.
Really?
I was like, champagne all around. Happy Super Bowl. But yeah, so after I did that commercial, they wanted me to be on a reality show about, like, kind of like striking it big, quote unquote, I guess, or whatever. But I didn't do that one either. So. I don't know. They haven't been able to grab me, but maybe one day.
Exactly. Maybe one day it'll come up, you know.
Never say never, yeah.
Right. I did see the clip you linked to with you being a vampire, right?
Oh, you
know that one? What was that about? I mean, you know, that's pretty funny.
Was that not hilarious?
Yeah.
That was a job I worked a couple weeks ago, and it's for this video game company out of China. And
is that what it was? Because the guy was like really weird, you know? I mean, he was funny. The guy that does the main commercial, right?
Right. The idea was like cheesy car dealership commercial,
right,
or whatever.
That's exactly what it looked like.
It's called Monster Castle is the name of the video game. And I mean, I don't play video games, so I have no idea what it is. But it's apparently popular like in China and amongst the video gaming community. And it was just like such a fun job. And the crew was great. And I think the product turned out really fun. It's always exciting to get dressed up and get FX makeup on you and
do silly things.
Exactly, yeah. It lives on forever on the internet.
There you go, exactly. All right, well, there's a lot to talk about, but we're going to get to our guest now, and who's sitting here patiently enjoying our conversation, but I'm sure she wants to join in. So we have Ashley Stahl in the studio. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm picturing you in your Jazzercise outfit right now, Sam.
Yeah,
so we're starting off on the right foot.
No, actually, I wasn't wearing that stuff.
That threw me, but
just
I like
shorts
it.
And a tank top. But no, I mean, it was, it's funny how people laugh about it. It was like the in thing.
It's the colors. I'm picturing a lot of bright colors on you, Sam.
Yeah, no, that's quite. But the thing is it was funny because I was the only guy in the class.
Oh, that's
me and another guy or something, you know. So that was funny. But they'd have the best music, and it was really intense workout too, you know.
Can't say no to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you have a fast song, and you have to move to the beat and stuff, do some, you know, jumping and whatever, you know. Not very easy, I must say. Anyway, Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you're a career coach.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
So I help millennials, people in their 20s and 30s, figure out their purpose, land job offers, or launch businesses. So all things career and entrepreneurship, which is super fulfilling given that so many people are seeking meaning in their careers right now. So I really try to be a vessel for that.
Yeah. People don't just want jobs. They want careers, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't just want
Who wants
jobs?
A job, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is that it's so unstable and you don't make a lot of money and you keep moving around and everything. So people embark on careers and stuff, and you help them plan a career?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of the time, you know, what you said is so true. People don't want a job. They want a career. But I think, you know, if you think about the millennial generation, people born, you know, ages right now, anywhere between 20 and 34, what's so profound about it is that, you know, we were born during a time where it was like the revived feminist movement. You know, we saw Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Sheryl Sandberg lean in, all these leaders. And we were ready to carry the torch, especially women, you know, carry the torch and hustle and work hard in our careers. And then we kind of ran off the cliff of the recession when we all graduated college. It was like right on time. So,
I know. That was impeccable timing for me as well.
Yeah, you remember that, Kelsey. And so I think that it created this dynamic where it was kind of the end of company loyalty, where the numbers is what mattered, you know? So if you had a good job, we as millennials were watching people who had been at companies for 20, 30 years get laid off. So I think that was kind of the end of corporate trust. And now people are feeling less tied to owing their employer anything and more tied to themselves and what they're going to do in the world. So it's really a special thing. I mean, getting 20-somethings, 30-somethings, even 40-somethings. I mean, I have clients who are doctors, lawyers.
Oh, wow.
And they've done a lot in their career, and they're just at a point where they say to themselves, I want want more.
Right. I want something else.
Yeah. And they're not willing to spend that last 20 years just because they did medical school, just because they specialized. They're ready to let it go.
Right.
So it's
powerful. That's interesting. Yeah. Because you think, you know, you want to stick with that career for all your life since you invested so much in it. But I think today, and you're so right, you know, I mean, in my generation, I remember when I was younger and I would see people working, it was always like, you got to show you've had a long experience at a company, you know, that you worked there for many years, because otherwise, why are you hopping from job to job?
Right.
But the thing is, today, it's not like that, you know? Things change so quickly that people change jobs a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it seems it's okay. It's acceptable now.
Yeah, I think hiring managers expected, especially because of the recession, that it was really common for the economy to be so unstable that it's not unusual for them to see resumes with, you know, a lot. And of course, you don't want your resume to be a courtyard, a graveyard of trial and error, you know.
Right.
You want to kind of pay attention to that. But still, I think that recruiters are so much more understanding and flexible and open. And at the end of the day, employers just care that you're a performer and that you're going to execute and you're going to deliver. So whether you've had many jobs or not, they just want to know what's in it for them. What are you going to do for them?
How exactly. Are you going to make a difference?
Your
ability. Right. And, but sometimes it's difficult because what you did before is totally unrelated to what you want to do now, right?
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I love career pivots. I mean, that's what I did. You know, I worked in counterterrorism before this. So
I read that about you.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Interesting. Totally random. I mean, such an obvious career shift. Career coach from counterterrorism. Yeah. Really? So, I mean, having gone through it myself, I really, really understand the art of a powerful resume, something that's going to make someone kind of see your story beyond just the name of the job you did, but the meaning and what you can bring to your next job. So
right
definitely.
Well, we're gonna get back to this because now I need to know about the counterterrorism.
Can't just drop that.
No, of course we'll go back to it. But let's get a little background on you. Are you originally from LA?
Yeah, I'm from LA, born and raised.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Not many people are.
I was just gonna say, you're a rare breed.
It's a special place. I really love LA. People have mixed opinions about it. I think it's such a special place, and there's something here for everyone, you know.
True.
Yeah, there's a neighborhood for everyone.
If it wasn't the best place in the world, you wouldn't see so many people moving here.
Totally,
you know?
Exactly.
But if you want to look at like the biggest destinations in the world for immigrants, New York and LA, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where people go.
Yeah.
So have you traveled at all outside of LA and things
like
that?
Yeah. So I've lived in different cities. So I lived in Washington, D.C. for my first career in national security.
Oh, how did you get into that?
You know, it's a long, but I can make it a shorter story.
Okay.
So in 2008, I was always studying political science. I grew up in a house where the news was always on. I was always really fascinated by what was happening in the world. I had uncles who was always arguing about politics. Yeah. The news came on, the argument started.
And, I know. I had an uncle just like that.
Yeah, everyone has that uncle, right? I'm sure everyone's listening right now. They're thinking, I have an uncle that argues about politics. It's one of those hands-off topics. People always go in for the blood, you know?
Yeah.
So true.
That was my family. And so, you know, even when I was a little kid, I had an opinion whether it was backed by anything or not, you know. And so going to college, it was totally natural to study political science and government, and languages always came easily to me. So I spoke Spanish fluently when I was a kid.
Oh, you were so lucky. That is one
thing.
Well,
it's gone now. Oh. But the only language I've kept is French. It came easily.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful language, and I loved it, and it was almost like must have known it in a past life because I just spoke it so quickly. And going to college, I studied political science. I lived abroad in France, and I'll never forget this moment where I didn't really know what I was going to do in political science, but I knew I wanted to do something that counted, something that really mattered. And in 2008, I was living abroad, and I came across this man and a woman, and they weren't French, because they were yelling in a different language that I didn't know. And the woman was carrying a baby, and the man, out of nowhere, just hit her across the face.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, and it was just us. I mean, it was a Sunday. It was raining. I lived in a rainy city in France, and being able to see that and the baby in her arms, seeing that, growing up around that, something about it just got me stuck on women's rights and how could that be?
Horrible.
Yeah, and she locked eyes with me, and she was wearing this veil, and she looked through the veil at me, and I'll never forget just knowing I wanted to do something in international affairs that protected women.
Whoa.
And oddly enough, my translation of that moment was counterterrorism. Don't know how exactly that was the exact space. But from there on out, I did everything to set myself up to have a career in the Central Intelligence Agency or something along those lines, spying, case officer. So I learned a bunch of languages. I applied to all the schools I could. I went to grad school in London.
Did you really?
Yeah, at the Department of War.
Yeah,
that's
King's
dramatic.
College London. Yeah, so dramatic.
You got at least a couple books in you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's probably a lot you can't tell us, right?
Yeah.
About what you did, right?
Yeah, there's a lot that's stuck in my mind that I remember about that time. And I think, you know, having worked so hard to get there, having finally gotten a job, my first job was as a defense contractor in national security. And, you know, it was an amazing opportunity. I remember so many, I was around a lot of men in the military, and they'd come up to me and be like, how old are you? What are you doing? I'd be like, I'm 23, you know, and it just goes to show for job seekers, for anyone that have career dreams, that anything's possible. Because I was so, I don't want to say I was underqualified for that job, because I studied hard. I had a lot of knowledge about the work that I was doing and the country I was working. I was working on Afghanistan.
Mm.
But, you know, it was amazing to kind of see how different people would stop and say kind of, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
How did you get here? I would travel to different military bases across the country. One of them was a training center that looked like a sunken Afghan village.
Really?
To prepare people for the real deal. So
the training and stuff?
Yeah, it was a training program to prepare people to deploy for the front lines of the war on terror. So I had these citizens for 6 weeks. They were all senior government officials. They were masters at their topics, some were from different niches, you know, development, agriculture. And they were flown to Afghanistan for a one-year deployment to educate the Afghan government on how to govern themselves on these topics.
Yeah.
So it was a really powerful program to watch.
Yeah.
But, you know, needless to say, I ended up changing my mind and changing my path.
Hey, a woman's prerogative.
Totally. I'm a Gemini, too, so every moment of my life is separate from the last.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, really special thing. Yeah.
I love it.
So how long did you do that for?
I would say it was a year and a half that I was working for the Pentagon, and then I was picked up in the private sector, which is really common, people in government. I mean, usually people spend more than a year and a half. That's quite short. I was picked up by a global political risk consultancy, and my job there afterwards was to monitor a threat team for a Fortune 500 company who was tracking terror threats and security risk all over the world, making sure that their staff who were abroad were safe. Mm. So we had like an intel database, and I would just be able to run a team of intelligence analysts making sure that threats were monitored, and if there was an explosion somewhere, that people were where they were supposed to be, stuff like that.
Wow. So like the Bourne Identity in Europe, right?
Totally.
I mean, doing all these things in the background.
That's so neat.
It's very cool. I mean, yeah, you definitely have a couple books in you for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're so young still, you know?
Yeah, I'm 28. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to say, you can't be much older than the people you're mentoring,
guiding. Well, a lot of my clients are much older than I am.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I have clients anywhere from 20 to 50 years old, and it's all the same thing. Either they want to figure out what they want to do with their lives, they want to get job offers, or they want to launch their business that they've been thinking about.
Yeah.
And what I found with age is that all people really care about is that you can help them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how old I am. For a lot of people, if I can give them the answer they're looking for,
of course,
they don't care. So
yeah, whatever you can do for them.
Yeah, totally. It's about results.
That's true. Yeah. Well, we're talking to Ashley Stahl. She's a career coach and obviously a former CIA agent or whatever you want to call it.
No, Pentagon.
Yeah, Pentagon. But
allegedly.
You did mention the CIA. So,
yeah.
But. But you're a career coach and everything, and you're into politics. So maybe we'll leave a few minutes at the end to talk some politics or something. Huh, Kelsey?
We like to talk about that.
Yeah.
We do.
I'll keep it light. I'll keep it loving. Yeah.
It's okay.
Keep the love alive. Yeah.
Yes.
As long as we don't talk too much about Donald Trump.
We have our own way to handle that charming man in France.
Yeah.
Like
I know. I'm finding out I've become that uncle to talk about politics all the time.
Yeah, you're that uncle.
Yeah.
I knew it.
So you have a couple of websites, Ashley.
Yeah.
you have, so not only do you coach people in person, right? Mm-hmm. But you also have a website where you can help people online.
Yes. Yeah,
so tell us what that is.
Yeah, this really lights me up. I mean, every week, this is really my purpose, I think, is I created landmorejoboffers.com. Mm-hmm. So at landmorejoboffers.com, I get 500 people a week minimum register, and they show up for a free training I do on how to master the job hunt and how to get paid what they're worth, all in 4 to 8 weeks.
Right.
So a lot of people find me all sorts of different countries. We have people from 19 countries finding me online, which is really cool.
Isn't that neat? I love how that
really
happens.
Is.
I mean, 500 is a lot, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just, it's what's amazing about it is having grown up in the United States and having lived abroad both in London and in France, what I've learned is that we're so assertive with our networking in the United States.
Mm.
But just because we're assertive doesn't mean we're doing it well. It just means we're doing it assertively.
Exactly.
And so it's really special when I get people from all over the world who don't know what networking really looks like, and they're really scared. They're overwhelmed. It can be scary. I mean, haven't you been to one of those events where it's kind of like you want to hide in a corner?
Especially if you're not very social.
Exactly.
Naturally.
You're an introvert. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've
never had that problem.
But,
so funny.
You know, people do.
Yeah.
People do.
Yeah. That's
so
true. But that's why you often want to go to these things with somebody, you know, so you're not like alone, you know.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, that's amazing. So you've accumulated a lot of knowledge. How did you get into this? I mean, and what what qualifies you to give people advice about career?
Yeah. So back when I had gotten my job for the Pentagon as this defense contractor, the one thing that struck everyone around me who was struggling, because this was 2010, 2011. Was that I got a job at all, and then I got one quickly, because that was the time period where it was months and months, and everybody was moving home with their parents. So I had a lot of friends from college who were calling me saying, how did you, you know, and these are students who are the top of the top, King's College London, war studies. I mean, these are such amazing students, and they are sitting there unemployed after they've done every internship under the sun.
Wow.
So I would get on Skype with different friends. I'd go to coffee in Washington, D.C. I got kicked out of a Starbucks once because too many people came. And they like, this is too many people. You got to go into the park. And I started talking about job hunting because I had learned after falling on my face, because I really did fall on my face. I said the wrong things. I asked people favors. There's a lot of mistakes you can make when you're job hunting. And I did all of those. So after falling on my face, I met a lot of amazing women in Washington, D.C., a lot of powerful women who go out of their way and sit down with me. And now a lot of them are entrepreneurs. They've left government and started businesses that have social good undertones to that, which is really amazing. And they would sit me down and they would talk to me about my job hunt, and they would go out of their way. It was very rare. I mean, I don't think people go out of their way like this quite
that's
often.
True.
Hours
yeah.
of their time.
That's true.
And, you know, next thing I knew, I moved to D.C. I had no money. I mean, I had $3,000, which in Washington, D.C. is
nothing.
It's you can't even live for a month. So
that's like a night out.
Yeah, it's in D.C. If you're making it rain in D.C. Yeah, yeah. Maybe you're, you know, kind of, you know, yeah. And, you know, not only that, but I got there and I didn't even know what I was doing. So with $3,000, I probably had 6 weeks worth of time on me to stay there.
Right.
I had friends I could stay with. And the only thing worse to me than not getting a job was coming home broke.
Exactly.
And unemployed.
Isn't it, though?
Right.
So when I moved there and I really hustled to get this job for the Pentagon, I went from having no job hunting skills, because the first job I ever got out of grad school was an admin making $30,000 in Los Angeles.
Really?
So that was fresh out of grad school, and, you know, I had this fancy degree, and, you know, there I was.
Like, why aren't I making more money?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not about entitlement. I'm willing to work. I've always been willing to work. So it was more just kind of that.
Right, but you have to make a living.
Exactly. And I was really struggling. So it lasted just about 9 months, but I couldn't get a job. And that was when I quit that job. I moved to D.C. And next thing I knew, in 6 weeks, I got 3 job offers. I tripled my salary. And thanks to all these women in my life, they kind of sat me down, because like a lot of people, you know, you kind of think, oh, this is good enough. They're offering me a job. I said, these women were like, uh-uh, you're going to leverage these job offers. You're going to negotiate. And that is something that I started to teach people through my own experience. And it wasn't something I ever thought I could get paid or be a professional doing. It was something that brought me joy. And at a certain point, I realized, you know, no matter what job I'd get, I love job hunting so much that I'd rather just be job hunting all the time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I love the pursuit. Like, there's some high off of it. Like, you know, just this morning I heard from a client, she got a job offer that she's so excited about. That just totally gets me going. So I start teaching people about it. People come up to me and say, you should be a career coach. And I was like, that sounds like poverty. What does that even mean? Who is a career coach? You know, and I had all these judgments that it's like websites with purple waterfalls and rainbows, you know, like
sure.
total touchy-feely. But eventually I started teaching 20-somethings how to job hunt. And as I got really masterful at that, I started getting contacted by 30-somethings who were making career pivots, whether they were lawyers, doctors, marketing professionals, anything.
Right.
And it just kind of went from there. And now, most of the time, I spend my time working privately with people who are launching businesses, especially women, service-based businesses, coaches, therapists, consultants. And you can have a lot of impact on someone's life when you can help them make money.
That's so
absolutely
true.
I mean, the career is the most important thing, you know.
Yeah.
And if people don't feel secure in their career, everything else falls by the wayside.
Exactly. You know? You have to be proud of how you spend your time.
You really do, you know. And so, I mean, that's amazing. So you made such a big turnaround.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
So I went out, actually, ironically, this week with what happened in San Bernardino. I went to school in San Bernardino.
Really?
University of Redlands. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
For undergrad.
Right.
I studied Arabic at UCLA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was before that whole time when I was an admin assistant. That was kind of how I kept myself busy. I mean, can you only imagine working at an ad agency and seeing some girl on lunch break drawing Arabic characters?
I know.
You know, that was me practicing. But yeah, so I went to UCLA for Arabic, and I went to King's College London for my master's in international affairs, and now I'm getting another master's in psychology at University of Santa Monica.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're very smart. I mean, you love to
Don't
study,
be
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You love to learn.
I love to learn,
right.
And that's why I love what I do, because this is the kind of field where the more you learn, the more you serve.
Right.
You know, you help people better by reading, and essentially, I mean, women who are making career pivots, they come to me, and I'm someone who's read 20 books on it in the past 6 months, and they don't have time to do that.
Right.
So it's also kind of a way to offer as much as I can and learn as much as I can.
That's so great. You got more degrees than a thermometer.
That's a good one.
Oh, my
I like
goodness.
That. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's something I'd love to do, you know, to go back to grad school and everything, you know, because I love studying. I mean, and that's how I replace or fill that need is with books, you know, because you need that constant stimulation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you get bored easily after a while and all this stuff. And so let's talk specifically more about like job hunting and things like that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some mistakes that people do.
Yeah.
What are some like terrible mistakes that people should look out for when they look for a job or a career?
I think with networking, first and foremost, is asking favors. Like when you meet someone and the first thing you say is, can you connect me to someone? Can you pass my resume along? You got to build a relationship first. And that's why it's important to always be in a state of job hunting without actually job hunting. Meaning just networking. You know, networking,
networking
is
all the time.
Yeah.
So then when you're ready to ask for the favor, you already know the person.
Built a relationship.
Right.
You've practiced kindness to them in some way. Maybe you've helped them in some way. You know, obviously the second best time to network is when you need a job, if you haven't been networking at all.
Right.
But I really see it as a way of life. Just on my way here, I got a Starbucks and, you know, I'm talking to somebody in line.
Wow.
And it's not about being on all the time and burning yourself out. I just think it's about being open and available versus having your head down in your phone too often and too much.
Yeah.
Another mistake I would say is not having an elevator pitch. You know, the number one interview question is tell me about yourself.
Sure.
Right.
It's also at networking events, tell me about yourself. It always blows my mind because we know it's going to be asked. And there's always, you got to train your ear because there's always some version of that question. It doesn't have to be tell me about yourself. It could be what brought you here, what got you interested in this job. It's all tell me about yourself.
Right.
It's all the same question.
That's true.
And it should really trigger some sort of thoughtful elevator pitch that you've really thought about to express who you are. And so many job seekers regurgitate their resume. And when you're the 20th person in the row, they've already looked at your resume. Before you walk through the door, it's just kind of like an eye roll for them, and you know, total snore. So you gotta kind of spice things up. You gotta be honest. You have to be authentic and heartfelt, really explaining why this job lines up with your life purpose in the world and why this means something to you.
Yeah.
Because people don't buy what you do; they buy why you do it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and you also get to have an opportunity to present yourself beyond that resume, beyond that piece of paper, you know.
Yeah.
It's the first impression that plays factor here, you know.
Absolutely.
And so I totally see that, you know. I mean, I can totally see. So you're saying you should have a prepared answer for that question.
Yeah, you really should.
Not start from when you were born and all that stuff, but the relevant things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what pulls you to this job? Why does this mean something to you? Have you always known you wanted to be doing this sort of job, and why? Why is it so important?
Right.
And not only that, but I think another mistake that job seekers make, and this one kills me, is they take a job to get their foot in the door.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And I just
so they
think,
compromise for little.
Yeah.
Thinking they're going to
get
move up.
With it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And here's
and
what
that's
happens.
That's a mistake?
It is, because more often than not, it just keeps you pegged in a job that you didn't want to be in. You stay in that job for years, you know, at least 1 year, if not two. And by the time you want to do something else in the organization, it's quite common. Not always, but it's quite common for your employer to think, you know, well, you know, they're kind of an underperformer. This is the kind of job they're in.
Right.
Why
yeah.
would we put them in this job,
yeah,
that job,
true.
When they belong in this job? And or they're doing such a good job as our assistant. Why would we get a new assistant? They're so perfect right there.
Right.
And it's so sad because the job seeker, you know, the employee buys into this belief that doing the work or doing this grunt work is going to pay off. And next thing you know, they're stuck in a job for way too long and they're not moving up.
Yeah.
And they're moving out.
So you don't recommend people go and start in the mailroom and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I know that that's a phenomenon in L.A., you know. The
it
mailroom
is, isn't it?
The creative agent or the talent agencies especially. But I think that that's kind of passe. I think if you have a good education, you're really smart, you're personable, you have networking skills, there's no way you're going to end up in a mailroom. There's just no way. And that's why, you know, landmorejoboffers.com, it's like, that's what I teach people on my free training. Is like, don't take a job just to get your foot in the door. It's not going to work. Here's how you need to network to be able to start a conversation that turns into a job interview.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, you know, I would, I can definitely see how a lot of people can use your advice, you know, and your experience and everything.
Yeah.
So, landmorejoboffers.com, you guys can go and check it out. We're talking to Ashley Stahl, of course, and she's a career coach, and she can help you out whether one-on-one or through the website, right? So people go to the website, they register. What can they expect there?
When they go to landmorejoboffers.com, they get access to a free training. I host one every now and again. There's always one upcoming, whether it's close or far. It just depends. But it's always up, and the date is always there for people to see. And it's free training on job hunting, so they can expect to learn about their resume, what big mistakes to avoid that send their resume to the trash. They can expect to learn about networking, how to have conversations that turn into more job interviews. They can expect to learn about job interviews, how to answer curveball questions, and also salary negotiation, how to negotiate a salary.
You know, I think salary negotiation is the
best
thing. Yes, well, because I was reading an article, actually, that men are much better at this than women.
Yeah.
And that is part of the reason why women are underpaid a lot of times.
Yes. And 60% of millennial women right now are not negotiating their salary.
Right.
And that costs them about $500,000 throughout the course of their career by not doing that. Which, depending on what city you live in, that's a house.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
Maybe in New York, a studio.
Right. Yeah. In New York, it's a closet.
Yes. But yeah, that's exactly where I cover that. And from there, they'll get emailed with the details to register and show up live when I'm there.
Right.
They can register right on the page.
Yeah.
And I answer their questions live on the line during the free training. It's a free workshop, really, online. That,
and are there packages people can buy for, like, more intense, personal?
Definitely. I mean, every now and again, I would say every training I do, there are some people that want to take a deeper dive, and I have all sorts of different options depending on what they can afford. Because if anyone's like me, I was really struggling financially when I was looking for a job back in the day. So there's an e-course that I do called the Limitless Career Lab for people to land more job offers. It's only for people who want to land more job offers and have a still job hunt.
Yeah. A little closer to the mic.
Yeah. And there's also private coaching that I do, and I have other private coaches I refer people to based on their price points and what they can afford. I'm really just here as much as possible to be a vehicle for people to get the results that they
You're
want.
You're a vessel.
Yeah, I'm a vessel. Just a vessel. God use me. Yeah.
Channel all that stuff, right, to other people. Well, you know, I mean, this is fascinating stuff. Do you have any time for anything else in your life? I mean, you seem so busy doing all these things and stuff.
What he really means is tell us about your love life.
Tell me about my love life.
No, I don't mean that.
Well, you never know. I've got, you know, I actually got engaged last week, so I have a whole love life.
Congratulations.
The ring is on the wrong finger. I have to get it signed.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, so that's really
I'm like, are you
exciting.
Waiting for another proposal? See which one's bigger. Maybe. Like, which one of these do I want to keep?
No, so yeah, that's juicy, I guess, and really exciting. You
Congratulations.
Know. Thank you. It's really fun. Other than my business and my company, I have a huge team that supports me, which is really something. I can't do anything alone.
So people work for you?
Yeah.
With you, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and honestly, I have such appreciation for that. And, you know, when you're younger, I think you hear CEOs talk about, well, it's all in the people you hire, and it's all about the people. And when you're a kid, you kind of roll your eyes, like, whatever that means. Or when you're in college, you know. But then when you actually own a business and you see how much of an impact it can have on your life, to hire someone that makes a difference for you and really furthers the mission that you have, you know, it's amazing. But outside of my business, I write for Forbes. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really fun. A really cool way to connect
with
people.
What is your article?
It's just my column. It's just the Ashley Stahl Forbes column.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so I just write about anything. And it's really a personal thing, believe it or not. Right now, I think one thing I'm kind of tinkering with is I'm thinking about interviewing women about burnout and how they overcome burnout. Because I had some burnout a year ago. And it was so bad. I literally, you know, put all of my clients on hold for 2 weeks, and I ended up on a beach in Israel, just sitting there for 2 weeks, so burnt out. And I've never experienced what proper burnout is until that time. So I've really healed from that. And, you know, my intention is to run a practice from an energized, positive space. And,
you know, you got to balance things in
exactly.
your life, right? You can't be 100% into the business.
Exactly.
And that's what I do, you know. And the thing is that you do come to a point where you feel, I need to get away. I need a break. Mm-hmm. I need to not look at the computer for a few days, mm-hmm. you know.
Your eyes start to bug out.
Right.
You know,
too
much computer screen.
Yeah, not to think about these things, you know.
And also handling burnout in the right way.
Yeah.
Probably, I mean,
yeah, and how do you handle it?
On a beach in Israel is a great idea. I know a lot of my friends who will not be named, but end up in a bathtub with a bottle of vodka.
Oh, see, that's not good. That's not a good burnout tool.
No, it's not.
Yeah, well, and actually, ironically, I was in Israel during when there was a bit of war. It was in July 2014, so it wasn't exactly a kind of burnout-free vacation. I was there were sirens going off and telling.
So why did you go there?
I know.
I had no idea. I landed in the city the day that all of this stuff had happened on the
news. Okay, so it was news to you.
Yeah, it was news to me. But what I have been inspired to do is interview women and maybe put it in the form of a podcast or just something on my blog or something through my Forbes column. I'm not sure yet. Just about how they've overcome burnout. You know, you have Ariana Huffington talking about sleep. And
sure.
I think it's going to be really healing for a lot of millennial women who are like me. We like to achieve, but we are human. And we understand there's more to life than that. And we're not just here to be output. And I think that this society has a mindset that the more you do, the more you are.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, think about the way we talk. We say, I'm too busy for that.
Right. Yeah. Or what do you do, you know, for a living or something, you know? So what you're saying is we don't focus so much on who we are, but rather on what we do.
Yeah, not only what we do, but how much we do, you know? Yeah.
Like, and that defines us.
It defines us, exactly.
You know, is not good. I don't
know. Yeah,
think.
Like if you have a friend who's kind of, you know, luxuriating a bit for the week, it's like you'll say, well, I don't have time for that. You know what I mean? And it's kind of a worthiness thing. Like, I'm too busy and too important and I have too much going on for that.
Right.
You know, so I think there's an ego to it that I really want to look at and
help
people. That's
true. A lot of people do come across as that, you know? It's like, you know, I've got my career and they put up their walls and that's it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And
that's all they'll talk about.
Exactly. That's what's so meaningful about being a career and business coach is I think people tear off the mask at the moment that they find me. And believe it or not, my male clients are probably the most in contact with me more than women. And I think it's because men kind of hold it all in, and then I'm the person that they hire, and then they share all of where they're at.
That's
with.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time. I didn't want to talk to you about politics. You'll have to come back, you know.
Yeah, that'd be so fun.
You're a very fun guest.
Thank you.
So let's just finalize this. Everybody go to landmorejoboffers.com. A lot of information, a lot of great stuff here. Do you have like a blog or something too that you write?
You just find me on my personal site at ashleystahl.com. It's ashleystahl.com.
Right. And ready to love your career. And there's a lot going on here. You can see a lot of the things that you've written, I see.
Yep.
So very cool. Well, I for one am very impressed.
Thank you so much.
You've done a lot.
I am impressed. I think
you guys are uppers.
I think you'll be on the Forbes list one day.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you're very ambitious, and you're doing what it takes. You know, it's not like you're just dreaming about it. You're doing it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people think that they can just get somewhere without doing the work.
Right.
You know, and I think in order to get somewhere you've never been, you got to do something you've never done.
So true. It's the most common misconception. And it's kind of a sense of entitlement, I think, that is bred into a lot of young Americans today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, some people, I think they just get ideas and they think that they're just going to happen, you know, but ideas are like a dime a dozen, you know.
Exactly.
You have to actually put it into action and stuff.
Exactly. I'm more into execution. I think that's much more fun and interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Execution of work, not of people.
My God.
Which leads us to our situation today in the world. What do you think? I mean, if you were like the president right now and you had the ISIS problem, what would you do?
You know what? It's not even that I'm pleading the fifth on this. It's just that it's so unspeakable. You know, ISIS wasn't even a topic when I was in the government. So this is so new. I mean, Al-Qaeda was what we were focused on, the Taliban.
That's true, yeah. And suddenly they came out of nowhere. Although they've been doing this for a while, you know, but they've gotten farther than any other terrorist group
they
ever.
They have. You know what I can tell you that I think about is that the press is really furthering their mission. They are in for the PR. Yeah. And, you know, it is really something that makes me sad because on one hand, there's a responsibility in journalism to report what's going on in the world. But on another hand, to belabor it to a point where these terror groups are feeling like their mission is furthered, their message is furthered. They're inspiring more people by the minute it's sitting on CNN. And all these news stations, Fox, you name it, it just gets to a point where it's like, okay, you know what? There's got to be more responsible journalism, more awareness of how much you're putting things on the news. It's not about filtering and limiting. It's more about sharing it and moving on to the next thing.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, media outlets feel it's their responsibility to report everything that happens, you know, regardless of whether there's national security involved or anything like that, you know. Yeah, you were talking about Israel. In Israel, they can't release just anything that they want in the media. You know, they have to clear that with intelligence and the military and things like
that. When I was in the government, when Snowden released all of the, you know, the leak. So that was a really interesting time to be in meetings and as at the State Department. And people really did come up to me. And I really didn't know because you don't know. No one in the public knows how bad a leak is unless they see what was leaked.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
You don't know. So it was just this whole social conversation. But what are we really seeing? You know, and having people come up to me and explain and show me, you know, how much damage this actually caused, how many lives were lost, how many people were exposed as a result of that kind of leak. I didn't understand that until I was shown it.
And how much they compromised their national security, you know. Yeah. I mean, these are like secrets, and you have to have secrets to fight an enemy.
Yeah.
You know, you do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, ISIS is formidable. They have an estimated 30,000 soldiers, you know, people wanting to destroy everything that we've built, anything that anybody's ever built.
Yes.
You know, and just for world domination because they feel, you know, whatever they, however they interpret their religion, is that it's their mission to convert the whole world or destroy or whatever.
Well, not only that, I mean, the whole for us against us mentality is just so damaging, but also in this country, in the United States, it's like really paying attention to what's going on with gun violence. And
we were just talking about
how
that
scary
yesterday.
That is. I mean, you know, when I lived in France, I went to a preschool to volunteer, and little kids came up to me, and in French, they asked me if I was afraid I was going to get shot.
Really?
You're kidding.
At school. So that's what the international community sees and thinks. You look at London this week, there was a stabbing in a tube station. Only three people were harmed, which obviously doesn't justify only three lives, three heartbeats. But The stabbing and having knives versus guns. Right. Think about the kind of danger that having knives in a country versus guns, what kind of difference that could make. And so it's really something right now to kind of think about the right to bear arms, guns. Is it supporting us where we are right now as a country? The Constitution is here to support us.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, it's a very charged topic right now because we are being attacked, mm-hmm. you know, in many different ways and stuff. But at the same time, this invites a debate. We obviously are not going to solve this problem in 2 minutes, but
solving world problems over
exactly.
the radio in 2 minutes. Yep.
Exactly.
With a career coach.
But it definitely, I think there should be conversation and dialogue rather than just attacks, you know. And that's all you see on Facebook is people attacking each other, mm-hmm. You know, not really their opinions, but just...
Oh, my news feed is just flooded with a multitude of political rants.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need more cat videos.
Personally. Yeah, we totally need more cat animal videos.
But no,
baby videos.
Important. Yeah, it's important to talk about. It is, but it's getting a little crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Ashley Stahl, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome career coach, unforgettable career coach. You guys need to get in touch with her. I can't see how anybody can lose being around you, you know, when they want to get a new career or something.
Thank you.
You know? And it's very interesting that you mentioned how many people change careers later in life, you know, mm-hmm. where they realize, you know, I can't keep doing the same thing all the time.
Yes. I mean, 71% of the job market right now is job hunting at any given time. So it's fair to say the majority of people aren't happy in their jobs.
Yeah.
Yet all of us listen to that unhappy majority when making our career choices.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, you're definitely a winner.
Yeah, thank you.
And for those of you who are interested, she's not available. She's getting married.
Getting hitched.
So congratulations on
thank
that.
You.
And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Great to have you.
And give us the website again so people can know.
Yeah, you can find my free training and my free workshop on how to master the job hunt and get paid what you're worth at landmorejoboffers.com.
Sounds good. Ashley Stahl, thank you.
Thank you.
Kelsey, thanks so much again.
My pleasure.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.